Welcome back, folks. We're dreaming of a white Christmas here at InfoWars. I'm going to continue to dig into this article that has absolutely dominated the conversation over the last few days from Compact Magazine. But let me give you the history first. So in this, he identifies 2014 as a pivotal year where things change. He says, in retrospect, 2014 was the hinge, the year DEI became institutionalized across American life. And here's why. From trellis.net, 2014, the year sustainable investment went mainstream. See, in this article from Compact, they talk about the consequences of this. They talk about what it's like to be subject to the discrimination. And yet, the whole thing treats the phenomenon as just that, a phenomenon, as a you know, mental disease that swept through the population like a pandemic. No, this was deliberate. This was compelled from on high. This was done on purpose. And you can identify the methods that this was employed through this article, because in this article, this person describes his attempt to break into Hollywood and a journalist trying to get hired and academia. So you have academia, entertainment, and journalism. It's not a coincidence that these three industries were some of the first and most extreme going headlong into anti-white discrimination, anti-male, anti-Christian discrimination, which is in fact what ESG is, just a different name for it. Because it was about shaping the mindset around what they were doing. Because they couldn't just fire a bunch of white guys without seeding the media landscape with a narrative that portrayed it as a good thing, that made people scared to question what was going on. They targeted newsrooms and entertainment circles first, and academia, because it shapes the minds of people. It was on purpose. It was by design. Just like the censorship, this all comes out of the banks. It comes from the banks and their organizing and managerial manifestations like the World Economic Forum. So in 2014 was the year that they codified ESG and DEI scores and started pushing it in a real way at Davos, the World Economic Forum meeting, as well as BlackRock and all the others, started embedding this into their investments, meaning that it wasn't even a choice for industries whether or not to discriminate against white people. They were financially obligated to do so, because with complete, you know, arbitrary demands, BlackRock simply asserted that from now on, you were a better investment if you were more diverse. Absolutely, completely unrelated to the profit motive of corporations. The whole point of capitalism, what it's supposed to be designed around, is you offer something people want, they pay you for it, everybody goes home happy. If you aren't doing it well, if you aren't prioritizing the right things, you're going to lose money, you're going to go out of business. So you're incentivized naturally to choose the best people. Here comes BlackRock to say, actually, we think you should choose non-white people, even if they're worse for the job, and then we'll grade you higher as an investment risk. It's one of these things that it's like, how did anybody go along with this ever? It's actually literally against the law, which I don't even agree with the law, but Ford versus Dodge settled this. You are not allowed to make decisions like this on the basis of your own personal proclivity. You have to be able to justify it through profit. So then these big corporations understand that the world's largest investment companies are grading their performance, determining who that gets money and who doesn't, off of their willingness to engage in DEI ESG practices. So they engage in them because otherwise they don't get the investments, their stock market price plummets, other people get out, it becomes a feedback loop, their company goes down. They were compelled to do this by BlackRock, Larry Fink, and the World Economic Forum. I'll lay it out on the other side.
challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and it reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at x.com.
Welcome back, folks. Very coincidental thing just happened. I guess to keep it vague, I found out that I'm family friends with the person that wrote this article. And I've got some anonymous feedback for you from some people with some thoughts about what's going on, some elaboration on it. And I am going to continue to get through some of the more insane parts of this story. But again, just getting to why this happened. Why, you know, it's weird that we have to talk about this because we have been talking about it for years and everybody's acting like this is the first article to broach this, but like this has been a thing forever and we've been talking about it forever. It's not confusing. I mean, there's this article from 2 years ago after and they changed the headline. The original headline was after Black Lives Matter, corporate America promised to hire more people of color. It did. And then it's this celebration of the fact that since the death of George Floyd, 94% of executive hires in American corporations were non-white males. Only 6% were white. I guess it's not even white males. I guess it's literally just white. So 60% of the population, 6% of the hires. 60% of the population, 6% of the executive hires. On purpose, by design, because corporations told everybody, we are from now on discriminating on the basis of race. And everybody said, okay, for some reason, totally crazy. So it's not even like this. Any of this is new. We know that this has been a well-advertised, well-established practice, purported, like promoted and supported and encouraged by Larry Fink and Bill Gates and everybody who talks about this stuff. Like, why we're acting like this was an unexpected outcome. What else would you expect? What other outcome could there possibly be? Like, I get that it's good that we have an article that really lays out exactly how devastating it is to be affected by this, but this has just been going on. Again, it doesn't make sense. It's not a good thing, but that's my real question. It's not like, oh my gosh, this is so bad. How do we like get back from this? Is like, what did you think was going on for the last 5 years? What did you think the outcome of the deliberate discrimination could have possibly been? This is the original headline. Corporate America promised to hire a lot more people of color. It actually did. The year after Black Lives Matter protests, the S&P 100 added more than 300,000 jobs. 94% went to non-whites. Yeah, Apple, Walmart, Wells Fargo, you know, all of these massive corporations that are currently spending tens of billions of dollars outsourcing our jobs to India. Probably part of that, people of color hiring spree that happened. You know, don't hire white guys, hire the Indian guys. Oh, look, it turns out they sold out your entire company to their home nation. Gee, who would have thought? Who would have ever expected such an event? Crazy. Okay, so we've known this forever. This has been the case forever. Not that complicated. Again, I just want to say, like, Why this ever became a thing is almost impossible to comprehend, in the same way that it's impossible for me to comprehend why transgenderism became a thing. Very similar things here. A lot of similarities here on how they pulled this off and how they got people to go along with this. In your own life, would you ever, like, if you saved up, you worked every day, you put $100 a week away in a tin can, and finally you have $10,000, your precious money, your life energy, right, in physical form, you have that $10,000. If you invest it poorly, it goes away and all that work goes to nothing. If you invest it well, you can live off that money. It can provide dividends for a long time. Are you going to take the racial makeup of the board into account? Maybe if you're a racist, but like, is that what you're concerned about? Or are you going to look at, okay, these people sell products. They're making a product that people like. They're going to get a lot of customers. I'll go with them. This company has a long track record of steady growth. I'll go with them. It is an act of insanity to come in and say, I know, I'll invest my money because this boardroom has the highest percentage of black women. In fact, all of my investments forever will be almost entirely dictated on the percentage of black women in the boardroom. You would go broke. It's an absurd way to judge investments. That's the way BlackRock decided they were going to invest. The board of BlackRock, who is, I remind you, entirely composed of Jewish men, decided to use their inordinate financial power to force every corporation in the country to suddenly judge their own profitability on the basis of whether or not they had a lot of white people. It is so crazy. And I've talked to bankers about this. And I've asked bankers, like, this was like years ago before ESG was well known to everybody. And I asked them, like, so do you know about this, like, ESG thing? They're like, oh, yeah. It's like a new metric that BlackRock has. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't really make sense, does it? And they're like, well, kind of not. But, they want to make it more diverse. And it's just like, okay, what? So now, like, your job is to manage people's money, and you're going to put your clients' money in companies based on their diversity? You're going to lose all your... Why is anybody going along with this? But they have to, because BlackRock controls the world. They have trillions of dollars in investment. They manage all the retirement funds. If they say that ESG score is the new metric that we're grading by, companies fall in line. They have to, or they don't get investment and they go under. And if a CEO or a board member tries to resist it, the investors get cold feet, want that person out to bring in somebody who will serve the interests of BlackRock. And this is sort of proven by the fact that all of this came about in 2014, exactly when all of these institutions like the World Economic Forum, BlackRock itself, codified this into official policy. 2014, trellis.net, the year sustainable investment went mainstream. Sustainable, responsible, and, quote, impact investing assets have soared 76% in the last 2 years. SRI assets reached $6.57 trillion at the start of 2014, up from $3.74 trillion. So, according to 480 institutional investors, 308 money managers, and 880 community investment institutions participating in the survey, the top reason for offering SEG products remains client demand. People are just begging to have their money invested irresponsibly on the basis of racial makeup. From Echo Chamber, BlackRock and WEF currently control multinational corporations with an ESG social credit score. Their next mission is to control individuals with ESG credits, social credit scores, forcing them to digital ID. And this, of course, was all the way back in 2021, but it was well on its way then. And it simply lays out the process by which they created this, as they put it, quote, standard global model to enable people to securely document their participation in ESG DEI hiring. This is unfortunate. In 2014, Larry Fink was writing letters to the leaders of some of the largest publicly listed companies pushing ESG. 2014. This is Buckman at 21 on X. Larry Fink at BlackRock, purpose to profit. In 2014, Larry Fink started writing letters to leaders of some of the largest publicly listed companies, urging them to consider the importance of environmental, social, and governance issues. Fink is the chairman and CEO of BlackRock, one of the largest asset management houses in the country, or in the world, rather. The firm's success was rooted in its cost-effective passive investment products that rely more on tracking indices and companies. But Fink wanted his firm to engage with the companies in which they invest and hold them accountable for their social and environmental impacts. See how this works? See, they went from being an investment firm that tried to make money for their clients by investing in profitable enterprises to then taking their influence, taking the power that they wield through the management of other people's money, to then impose their own worldview on the people of the world through the companies that we have to interact with. It changed the hiring metrics. It changed what shows were picked up. It changed what products were offered. All of this came about by demand from on high, from Larry Fink at BlackRock, Klaus Schwab at the New World Order, at World Economic Forum. So as you read the article, The Lost Generation, they never address where this came from. They address how it manifested. They address sort of what it felt like to be in the rooms when this took place. But they never tell you that this was not some sort of spontaneously manifesting mental contagion that swept through the country. That's sort of how it's presented, as if, just invisible forces were just occurring in people's minds. No. The banks, with all the money, told all the corporations, if you want our money, you'll stop hiring white people. So that's what the corporations did. And they first targeted the media and news outlets so that they could frame this discrimination as a positive thing by packing the newsrooms with far leftist anti-white activists who could rhetorically justify the blatant discrimination that was being imposed from on high from Wall Street and Larry frickin' Fink. But it's not just them. But it wasn't just them, because obviously, when you talk about BlackRock, when you talk about these multinational corporations, you're also talking about the U.S. government. Because it wasn't just the richest companies in the history of the world who control trillions of dollars of your money to manipulate corporations, to bend them to your will. The U.S. government was involved in this as well. Are you surprised? UNPR proliferated ESG and related woke nonsense via their vast and supremely powerful transnational, unelected, unaccountable organization. This is an NGO. Since when? 2014, they have trained over 20,000 people on ESG. Signatories sit on a $121 million in AUM, and they must comply or explain the six principles. UNPR made formerly sane investors into climate activists and woke nutters. Al Gore is their fiduciary guru. Okay, so we got the U.S. government, things like USAID, funding the propaganda to justify the restrictions that are being commanded by BlackRock. You know the Rockefellers are going to want in on this. You know the Rockefellers aren't missing this party. The Rockefeller Brothers Fund's 2014 divestment strategy centered on aligning investments with their philanthropic pivot towards climate activism, publicly rejecting fossil fuels to lead by example in ESG trends and influence global policy. It preserved family legacy influence by redirecting capital to renewable and advocacy, hedging against regulatory shifts they helped foster. Conspiratorially, it likely enabled cashing out atop mature oil empires before orchestrating a controlled scarcity narrative, steering society towards centralized, higher-cost energy system for elite control. Wow, isn't that interesting that in the exact year that is identified by the author of the Compact magazine as the year that everything went to crap, that ESG and DEI firmly got rooted in the media landscape as well as the wider industry landscape of America, happened to be the year that Larry Fink started writing letters about this, that the World Economic Forum decided to make this a center point of their policy program, and you have the Rockefeller Foundation Sovereign Wealth Fund deciding that actually, we're not just capitalists, we're philanthropists. Okay, we're going to help people by forcing them to change their behavior and destroy their traditions or else we'll withhold the precious money. In the World Economic Forum in 2014, at the Davos meeting, what do you think it was called? Why we need a new kind of capitalism. Well, we got it. Oh, we got the new kind of capitalism. It's not capitalism. And do you notice who wrote this article? It's literally a Rothschild. Lynn Forster de Rothschild decides in 2014, we need a new kind of capitalism that discriminates against white people for racial justice and refuses to invest in any Western industry that uses fossil fuel while simultaneously giving out billions of dollars to China, who's building coal power plants faster than you can name them. But it doesn't matter because, you know, we're really, moral and driven by this righteous crusade to fix the world, you know, not the China part of the world, not the Africa part of the world, not the Middle East part of the world, but the European and white American world. We're going to fix that by destroying the people that built it. Thanks, guys. Wonderful. So in 2014, the Rothschilds and World Economic Forum decide that we need a new kind of capitalism. And what do you know? Everything goes to hell ever since. What a surprise. You also had BlackRock hiring as their managing director of investment stewardship team, Michelle Edkins, in 2014. She was extremely motivated by DEI and helped usher in ESG scores with their International Corporate Governance Network and Aspen Institute. Diversity matters. This was actually published by McKinsey and Company, another major think piece from these think tanks coming out and informing, you know, the highest level C-suite executives in America that diversity is actually the thing you should be prioritizing when you're thinking about hiring. And they actually, you know, provide all this justification for it, which is really interesting. Really interesting, because what you have here, this, again, written by McKinsey and Company, published in 2014, or maybe in 2013, this edition's from 2015, but they make this case with all sorts of charts, with very complicated math. We can go to the dot cam here and see some of, you know, all of the intelligence that they bring to bear. I mean, all of this complicated math to measure diversity and, you know, it's the Herfindahl-Hirschman Index for diversity with all this very complicated math. And we have all of these charts to prove how diversity correlates to performance. And, they make this case over the course of about 50 pages. And then we fast forward 12 years and everybody that believed this hogwash, everybody that bought the slop they were selling, is on the verge of absolute collapse and bankruptcy and insolvency. Who were the institutions that most forcefully and enthusiastically imposed DEI ESG restrictions? Hollywood, film production, mainstream media news. Name two industries that might not make it to the year 2030. Two industries who have absolutely, utterly, and completely collapsed over the last 10 years. So it's one of these brilliant examples where we get to look at the very sophisticated, well-reasoned, well-argued, rhetorically fascinating arguments from places like McKinsey telling you why diversity is such a powerful and good thing. People listen to them, and now we have the conclusion to the testing of the hypothesis. And it turns out that they were ass backwards the entire time, obviously. Because you don't need to be a genius. I don't need to use complicated math to tell you that if the thing you're judging people on when hiring them is how far away from white males they are in the, you know, diversity continuum, you don't need to be a genius for me to tell you that's a stupid way to judge profitability. That is a dumb way to do investments. That is a stupid method to determine who to hire and who not to hire. You're going to fail. Fast forward 12 years, they're all failing abjectly, even with ESG investment funds. Do you understand that? Do you understand why these companies made this calculation and decided to go along with it? Because think about it for a second. They run the calculus and they go, okay, If we hire the best person, they likely will increase our profits by $10 million a year. If we hire the not best person, they only increase our profits by $5 million a year. Okay, the best person is a $5 million bonus. But here comes BlackRock to say your ESG score will determine whether you get $100 million of investment. And so corporations choose the thing that would make them money in normal capitalism, or they choose the thing that would lose them money in normal capitalism, hiring the less capable person, selling the less popular products, in any normal system would result in a lower profitability. But because BlackRock imposes this artificial metric and then fulfills it by pumping these organizations full of money for complying to their DEI ESG score, then it turns out it is actually more profitable to hire the less profitable person because the lack of profits is made up for and then some from the investments from the people in the banks in New York who decide they want to use your money to control the world. So again, 2014. 2014 was the year, and it was not a coincidence. It was not an accident that was the year. That was the year that World Economic Forum, the BlackRocks, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and the American government decided to make the world this way. In fact, the title of the Davos meeting in Switzerland for the World Economic Forum, their 44th annual 2014 meeting in Davos, was called Reshaping the World: Consequences for Society, Politics, and Business. And this was when they started the codification of the ESG DEI madness, the mental plague that has literally destroyed our country in a way that may be irreparable. And all of this really gets to the height of absurdity when, again, you look at this as an objective viewer, as an alien species. This paragraph is so monumentally retarded, it's hard to explain. In the aftermath of George Floyd's death, newsrooms tripped over themselves to stage a, quote, reckoning. New York Times solemnly promised sweeping reforms on top of the sweeping reforms it had already promised. The Washington Post declared it would become the most diverse and inclusive newsroom in the country. CNN pledged a sustained commitment to race coverage, while Bon Appetit confessed that our mastheads have been far too white for far too long, and that the magazine had tokenized many BIPOC staffers and contributors. NPR went further still, declaring that diversity was nothing less than its North Star, its ultimate guiding light. All of this as a consequence of one black dude's overdose death in Michigan or Minnesota or wherever. Do you understand how insane this is? Do you understand how dislocated from reality this paragraph is? In response to a non-existent phenomenon of racism, that white police officers were killing black people, just literally wasn't happening. You get one example of a black guy overdosing, dying in police custody. That becomes a narrative that black people are being genocided by white police. And in response, every newsroom in America says we are now dedicating our coverage to destroying white people, and we're not hiring white people, and we're not letting white people speak about this. All because some random career criminal took too much fentanyl. What are we talking about?
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula and you like it?
I did, and I do, yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now, a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said, This was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in. In people who can't make it, it can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic-based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new products, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take this, it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else is doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after The Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there. The shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
The Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster.
Every crisis is an opportunity and the world will be reshaped in our vision.
Down with the globalist. Get ultra methylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Santa baby, slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful
girl. All right, welcome back,
girl,
folks.
Santa baby, so hurry down the
There's some breaking news here. MIT professor shot and killed in his Massachusetts home. An MIT professor was shot and killed in his Brooklyn, Massachusetts home on Monday night. 47-year-old Nuno Loureiro, a nuclear scientist and engineering professor, was shot multiple times. He was transported to a Boston hospital where he died Tuesday morning. A neighbor told CBS News they heard three loud bangs on Monday night. There is no suspect in custody. And he's an engineering professor that was just made, was just put in charge of the MIT Plasma Science and Fusion Center. Loureiro is taking the helms of one of MIT's largest labs. More than 250 full-time researchers, staff members, and students work and study in seven buildings with nearly 250,000 square feet of lab space. A theoretical physicist and fusion scientist, Loureiro joined MIT as a faculty member in 2016 and was appointed deputy director of the Plasma and Science Fusion Center, Plasma Science and Fusion Center in 2022. So that is interesting. And I'm not sure if we have any updates to this. So far, there's been no suggestion of a motive or even a potential suspect. But it doesn't sound like the neighbors didn't report hearing a big fight or anything. So again, the lack of information leads us at a loss here. Even if we just knew, like, did he die at his front door? Was the person in the house? Did they break in? Were they let in? I mean, that would really inform what the motive behind this was. But of course, for this to be a random attack is almost, you know, the possibility of that is almost non-existent. And the idea that this highly decorated, obviously brilliant engineer at MIT would have such a dysfunctional personal life, I guess it's possible, but there's also the political implications of things like, you know, nuclear cold fusion. And if you follow that sort of stuff, you know that there are a lot of companies making some major strides in this. And it's probably be by this time next year, there will be functional mini nuclear reactors on the market. In fact, China has claimed they're developing a like coin-sized nuclear battery that could last for something like 50 years. It's like the stuff that people assumed we would have. Like if you read sci-fi written in the 50s, like the Foundation book by Isaac Asimov, and it was just assumed that like, all right, in a couple of years, we're going to have miniaturized this nuclear energy thing and energy will be free and we'll all be able to power everything by little battery packs that never extinguish. Now, if that were to happen, you know, alternative free energy is kind of like the Jeffrey Epstein list of politics or of industry. It's like it would be an absolute positive for it to get released. It would also probably cause the world to crash. So I guess you have to weigh your options. We'll bring any information as we get it, but again, very little data about that shooting at MIT or of an MIT professor at his home. But it's just the latest in a series of insane headlines that I don't think will be slowing down anytime soon. Now, again, I feel like anybody watching me just sort of already knows everything in this Lost Generation article, and I've been talking about it for a while, so I'll move on. But I encourage you, it's a impactful read. And they talk about the endless diversity trainings, a racial climate assessment. At one point, reporters were told they had to catalog in minute detail the identity characteristics of all of their sources. And it's like, yeah, okay. We know. I mean, do we not remember Kamala Harris? I am a black woman. I'm wearing a sweater. Like, no, this became a thing. It's like a religion, like a prayer, a chant that you say. You identify your characteristics, I guess, on the assumption that somebody out there might be blind. Like, I don't know why they do it. It's a religion. It's performative. It's to signal that they are a part of the trusted group who understands the mission they're all involved in to destroy white people and act like moral superiors while they do it. The irony was, where older white men remained in charge, especially where they remained in charge, there was almost no room to move up. If you hired a team of white guys around you, you were putting a target on your back, recalled a hiring editor. At the New York Times Magazine, one of the few prestige magazines with a public masthead, Jake Silverstein, a Gen X white man, debatably, serves as an editor-in-chief, and Bill Wasik, another Gen Z white man, serves as editorial director, but of 9 millennial senior editors and 2 story editors below them, there's just one white guy, and he's been there since 2012, effectively grandfathered in. So that's sort of the point of this story, is it was all of these older executives who were basically happy to screw over their own progeny, happy to screw over people that are like them to prevent what would have been their, you know, rise through the corporation. They were happy to shut the door behind them and get all the praise and laudits of, you know, hiring people on the basis of their race, even when they're less qualified and less capable. In the early 2000s, many journalists I spoke to noticed something else. The young white men who once flooded internship and fellowship pools had simply stopped applying. Gen Z had absorbed the message that journalism was not for them. Now, I'd like to make a caveat to that. They've realized that mainstream journalism is not for them. So instead, we set up the alternative media, which is kicking the establishment, aka anti-white media's ass in every direction. So like, again, that's the other takeaway from this is like, all right, all of these industries, these three particular industries, entertainment, news, and academia, all systematically eliminated white people, have all completely failed over the last decade. And instead, there's been a rise of alternatives to all three of these institutions that are succeeding where the mainstream fails. Because white people. Because it turns out we don't need to be grandfathered into a pre-existing system. It turns out the best people will just create the best things even if you try to stop them. Isn't that interesting? They follow the story of this guy, Andrew, as he is battered around all of these newsrooms full of obnoxious lesbians. And this type of stuff is so, like, I don't want to be too, like, condemn these people too much, but they do kind of deserve it. They say the demographic shift was reshaped not only by who told the stories, but which stories got told. After George Floyd's death, Andrew's colleague Lucas was assigned a piece about why you should never call the police. I remember having to interview one of these abolitionists for a story about how if somebody breaks into your car or your home, it's white supremacy to call the cops, even if you need it for an insurance report, Lucas told me. That always made me feel gross. I think back on that with a lot of regret. Yeah, you should. Yeah, you should. Why did you go along with that? What an absurd thing to write a story about. But you went along with it. Why did you go along with it? Why did you do that? You know, I try to be understanding. I get not everybody's red-pilled. People just want to get along. They're not looking for a fight. They just want. But the point of this article is like the fight is here. You don't have an option not to engage. Your life is going to be destroyed if you don't engage. If you don't stop this where it is. If you don't make that sacrifice. And what I really don't understand is how they implemented this in every boardroom in America and nobody thought to sue. Not one person had the balls to go, if you fire me because I'm white, I'm suing this company to kingdom come. You cannot discriminate against me like that. How dare you first discriminate against me and then openly talk about it? I'll see you in court. How did, out of the tens of thousands of people this happened to, nobody thought to file a lawsuit? Nobody thought to make a big stink out of this and go to the media and decry it? You know, to tell you the truth, there probably were people that wanted to do that. It was probably the lawyers and the media themselves that said, the story's not worth telling. Your case isn't worth pursuing. Because this was a deliberate, top-down, all-of-society manufactured, organized crusade against white people. And we were left to hang out to dry. These are all my dudes. This is my age bracket, people I grew up with, my friends, who, despite being incredibly talented and trustworthy and hardworking, at least half of them struggle to find a job. Multiple of my friends have been the victims of, you know, deliberate H-1B replacement. Or in the case of Whole Foods, I've told this story a lot. I had a friend at Whole Foods who's like, yeah, I'm kind of confused. Like, we keep firing people, but then like we hire people also. So it's like, okay, if we're firing this guy, like this guy has a lot of experience. We've worked with him a lot, but then they hire some woman. I'm like, dude, they're trying to beef up their diversity score because they're being sold. This was right when Whole Foods was being sold to Amazon, and they were literally going through the, you know, executive wing of Whole Foods, the you know, headquarters there, and just eliminating all the white guys they could so they could hire minorities so they could present that as their ESG score to get the best price from Amazon when they were sold. And I'm sure everybody my age has stories like that. So, like, this is not anything new to me. It's funny. My friend just texted me about this story. And I go, oh, I've been talking about this for 30 minutes. She goes, you've been talking about this for years. It's like, yeah, actually. Actually, that's true. Like, I'm telling you, that was back in, like, 2012, maybe 2013, something like that. Maybe it was 2014. When was Whole Foods sold to Amazon? Because that was as far back that, again, it's like, was I some sort of super genius? Did I have some sort of crystal ball? I was predicting the future. I was reading the Compact Magazine article from 2025. No, I looked around and went, oh, they're firing the white guys and hiring non-white women. That's what's happening. Like, it's crazy. It's been 13 years and people still haven't they still don't understand this. They still don't get it. It's happening to you. It's crazy. This type of stuff where it's like, yeah, this is wrong, dude. You shouldn't be okay with this. They go along with it. So again, like, this is my cohort and these are my friends that could not find jobs. This is me, actually. Now that I think about it, this is very much me. Of course, I understood that this was happening. So, you know, around 2015 or so, it was like, well, time to give up on ever trying to make it in Hollywood. Better get involved in the real fight. It's just brutal. Andrew, for his part, was unable to adopt the performative allyship that had become expected. Quote, I always thought I was an effeminate nerd growing up, but my way of expressing myself now puts me in the most masculine end of men in media. I started to pick up on the fact that there wasn't much room for people who even speak in my timbre. So here's this guy who's like, he's not a particularly masculine guy. He thinks of himself as an effeminate nerd. But journalism has become so gay. He's like, I was the most manly voice out there. Which isn't about just like mocking the effeminate twinks that run our media. It's about understanding what that does to the entire atmosphere of the office. It's what it does to anybody who's a serious worker that wants to actually achieve things. It might seem subtle, but even just that little difference between like, hey, you need to give me that thing right now. And hey, look, I know you're really busy. If you have time, I'd love if you would grab me that. Don't worry about it if you don't have time. You do. Oh my God, thank you so much. Like, repeat that 10 million times. Repeat that thousands of times a day in thousands of different companies all over the country. And what you're dealing with is a major barrier to productivity, especially in a newsroom. If you have this atmosphere of everybody, and let me just say, this in and of itself is a little bit deceptive because this whole effeminate, empathetic, let's say things a little bit nicer and let's give people, you know, she's on a mental ill break today, so you have to do her work because she's getting her nails done. It's called self-care. Like, all of that attitude gives you the impression that everybody is soft, that everybody is a pussy. That's not really the case, though, is it? They aren't exactly soft and empathetic when they talk about white people, are they? Or when they talk about men, are they? So this is the real thing. It's bad enough if everything you say has to be put in this preschool HR baby speak to not offend the delicate disposition of the, you know, complete retard that got hired where they shouldn't have, which is another thing, right? Okay, you're hiring incompetent people, but you have to take their feelings into account. And so if they're incompetent, you definitely don't want to fire them. That would look really bad. And you really don't want to try to correct them because, you know, you're a white male correcting a black woman. That kind of looks bad, doesn't it? So you kind of have to work even harder to make up for the lack of competency in your ESG DEI hire coworkers. And you have to thank them for the privilege, right? But all that falls away when these very same people tilting their head and doing the little bird chirping hand motion as they tell you, you need to be more aware of the people in the office and the way that you behave, right? The minute it comes to white people or men or Christians or whatever else, it's like, well, I just think they should all need to be burned. Maybe they should be castrated. Am I right? And it's like, these people aren't soft. They aren't just empathetic to everybody. They're vicious, hateful monsters that use the social pressure, use the social impact of this faux empathy to force you to capitulate to their demands. That's what's happening. Okay. So I thought I'd mention that. It's also effeminate. It's like, that doesn't mean it's nice. That doesn't mean it's uplifting or beneficent. That means it's backhanded and insincere and more vicious than otherwise. They say white men may still be 55% of Harvard's arts and science faculty, down from 63% a decade ago, but this is a legacy of boomer and Gen X employment patterns for tenure track positions, the pipeline for future faculty. White men have gone from 49% in 2014 to 27% in 2024. In the humanities, they've gone from 39 to 21%. As again, this article is just full of stats to just show the complete cratering of, you know, the percentage of white people in any of these organizations. Again, most particularly entertainment, academia, and news journalism. A whistleblower sent me a document from early 2017, an internal needs sheet compiled by a major talent agency that shows just how steep the headwinds were. Across the grid, which tracks staffing needs for TV writers' room, the same shorthand appears dozens of times, quote, diverse, female, women, and diverse only. These mandates came from some of the most powerful names in television. This was systematic discrimination, documented in writing, implemented without consequence. It's striking how casual it all is. And they quote people just outright saying, Chicago Fire, the show, the upper level can be anybody, but we need diverse staff writers. As in other industries, upper level positions, writers with experience and credits could still be filled by white men, but the entry level jobs, the staff writers and co-producer positions that Matt and thousands of other aspiring writers were competing for, were completely reserved for others. So just stopping them from ever breaking in. And of course, the ultimate irony, I'll just repeat, is that TV sucks now. Movies suck now. Hollywood can't make its money. It can't come up with any new films. It's regurgitating the same slop over and over and over and over again, to the point that now we've got remakes of reissues of, converted TV shows that were based on a book, originally in a comic book. And it's like they've got nothing, no creativity, no compelling stories, no impactful narratives, no bombshell blockbuster surprises. No, I mean, and it's everywhere. The big budget slop is unwatchable. The small budget slop doesn't even exist. Netflix is filled with a bunch of gay propaganda and not a lot else. Hey, maybe you should bring the white guys back. Maybe there was a reason that white people were there and it had nothing to do with their skin color. Because see, all of this nonsense, hogwash discrimination against white people is all predicated on the assumed falsehood that white people only got their positions because they were hired because they were white. That never existed in this country. Maybe 100 years ago, you could make that case. But certainly for the lifetime of anybody still walking around, white people are not given their jobs because they're white. White people are not given a leg up because they're white. We earn our positions. And then you fire the people that have earned their positions, and then you do the thing that you're fighting that didn't exist. Now it does exist because you're doing it in reverse, and now everything sucks. Without exception. And everybody knows it. They just won't look to the obvious reasons why. Over Matt's 14 years in Hollywood, the changes have been staggering. In 2011, when he and the author moved to California, white men were around 60% of TV writers. By 2025, according to the WGO's own diversity statistics, they account for just 11.9% of lower-level writers. Women of color made up 34.6%. White men directed 69% of TV episodes in 2014 and just 34% by 2021. From 60% which is actually equivalent to the population. If you are actually going for a boardroom that looks like the real world, a boardroom that looks like America, then 60% is literally exactly what you would want. They don't want that. They want 12%. So now 60% of the population operates in 12% of the positions, and they call that equality. They call that representation. That would be like, I'm trying to figure out the equivalent. So if 60% of the men or of the writers become 12% more or less, that's a factor of five, right? So if black people are 15%, that'd be like a corporation where only 3% of their boardroom was black. When they're 15% of the population, right? A factor of five by how underrepresented they are. So Hollywood and the mainstream media looks at TV shows where black people are overrepresented, where 20% of the cast is black, and they say it needs to be 50%. Because we want it to look like real America when the population of real America is 60% white, less than 15% black. Do I even need to explain any of this? Does any of this mean anything? It's like I've just spent an hour and a half talking about this discrimination, and I could keep going for hours litigating every single little aspect of this. At the end of the day, all you need to know is that there was a deliberate, top-down, banker-designed World Economic Forum Rothschild Rockefeller designed agenda to discriminate against white people, to create animus towards white people, to seed the American media with stories and narratives depicting white people as evil in order to justify their blatant, abject, obvious, out in the open discrimination against white people, even though it was illegal, even though it was against logic, even though it was just offensive on the face of it. They got away with it because they rolled this out in a sophisticated fashion over a decade. That is a decade of young men lost, a decade of geniuses toiling away in anonymity, no institutional support. On the other hand, it's also been a decade of an astonishing rise of the alternative media, an astonishing rise of Substack and InfoWars and live streaming and entertainment that doesn't come from Hollywood. So they thought that they could just, you know, quietly do this and we wouldn't even notice. Everyone notices even if we don't notice. Everyone knows movies suck now even if they don't know why. Everybody knows the media can't be trusted even if they can't put their finger on it. So that in and of itself is kind of good news. And by the way, you want to support the talented white guys? You want to support the meritocratic white guys that got here on our own volition? TheAlexJonesStore.com. We get no legs up. We have you, the American people, and nothing else. Good thing that is more than enough.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
It is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here. A year after the Onion said they bought us, We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it and support us, we'll be off the air. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.